Pete Yost here with a quick word from our podcast sponsor, Huber Engineered Woods. In addition to sponsoring the podcast, Huber is a prime sponsor of the BS and Beer Symposium Series. And the next one coming up is in Portland, Oregon. It's April 9th and 10th at the Migration Brewing Company. And it'll start around 9 a.m. on April 9th and go to 5 p.m. on April 10th. The three of us will be there as speakers, in addition to some really great other highly technical experts in the residential construction and design field. So I strongly encourage you to check it out. You can go to bsnbeerkc.org to get more information. But you'll see Huber at this event as a prime sponsor, and we look forward to seeing you there if you can make it. And now on to the podcast.
Welcome to the Unbuild It podcast. I'm Jake Bruton, and today I am joined by my normal co-host, Steve Basic.
Howdy.
Who's super excited this morning. And Peter Yost.
Good to be here.
And we have another episode that we've had a lot of lately, the Q&A. We're going to answer some questions. Your questions that you send to questions at Unbuild It podcast have been amazing topic discussions lately, and we're very pleased. That you are sending questions in, and we're going to cut through all the giggling and laughing that normally happens at the beginning of the podcast, and we're going to let Peter just jump right into a question and read us a question.
Holy smokes, right to the point. So this is from Oleg. Actually, Oleg's probably sent us quite a few questions, but he says, and most importantly, love the show. Your YouTube videos have been phenomenal, helping us during the build process. I never thought I would be excited to learn about building science, but you
Me
have-
either.
But so you have done it. I watch every episode on YouTube. I probably continue to watch even after we're done building our home, despite I'm a late person. Okay. The question is, we are installing the Brone AI Series ERV. Our HVAC contractor is pushing for a simplified install with an ECM furnace. If we use this simplified setup, will running exhaust only in the bathroom induce significant pressure imbalances? Or does the ERV detect or compensate for these? We are absolutely installing a makeup air system in our kitchen for the range hood, but are concerned about the exhaust-only bath fans. We'd much prefer the fully ducted ERV setup, but the budget is tight. So there you have it. The question is, if I have an imbalanced overall system, do ERVs compensate for that lack of balance?
I think before we answer the question, we should talk about balance versus unbalance.
Cool.
Right. Like, let's set the stage. Does that work for you? You seem so excited to be here this morning.
Yeah. No, I'm really excited.
So we have exhaust-only systems, we have supply-only systems, and then we have balance systems. And the idea is that you can slightly depressurize a home with an exhaust-only system. You can slightly pressurize with a supply system, or... and they're most often associated with energy exchange. You can have the same amount of air coming in as going out.
Yep. So unbalanced or depressurizing the house, bath fans, kitchen hoods above a certain CFM, some radon systems, if they're not installed properly, could cause depressurization of parts of the house. You know, if you have a connection to the house from the radon system or something like that. The problem with a depressurizing only system is the negative, the house can operate under slight negative pressure, but after a little bit, it will start to equalize back out, right? Like, it's not just going to collapse upon itself because you're running a bath fan. It's going to find a place to leak in.
And interestingly, you could say, well, what's a little bit of pressure? What's okay? And the Environments for Living program, which is based on building science generated from Building Science Corporation, The goal always was to make sure that the house was never more than 3 pascals positive or negative. Now, I don't know exactly why we picked that number, but since, you know,
which is not much,
not much at all. In fact, you easily can get three pascal pressure difference just with wind acting on the building.
Sure.
So we're trying to keep it so there's not some steady, you know, 24/7 depressurization or pressurization.
And the depressurizing, those leaks that it causes, they are unmanaged. They're uncontrolled, right? Like, that's where the problem comes in. The problem comes from it. We don't know what it's bringing with it. That air that's leaking in could have pollutants, allergens, moisture, all sorts of different things with it, right? So that's the reason to not do that.
We probably also ought to say that in a vague general sense, you know, there might be a slight preference for an exhaust only system in a cold climate, right? Because then what you're concerned about is moisture going into the building assemblies during the winter. So if you gently are creating a negative pressure during the winter, that would keep moisture from going in the assemblies. Now, if you take that exhaust only to Miami, where you're pulling that warm, moist air from the outside into building assembly, probably not such a good idea. So there is some climate tuning of these different systems, but the systems that provide the overall greatest performance are ones that have dedicated pathways, right? Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the balance system, we definitely have a designated pathway inside and outside the building for both air streams. So if you get down to it, I think really high performance homes, they're going to have balance systems.
Okay. And so his question is like, if we also have bath fans in the assembly, which I think we could make a pretty decent argument that if you're going to have an ERV, you should scale your ERV to eliminate the need for bath fans. And I will tell you that Steve and I are friends with a builder who I have had multiple discussions about. I would still like to do bath fans. And one of the things that it still rings in my ear, he said it years ago. He was like, I would rather go ahead and put in bath fans so that when I take a shower, the walls don't get sweaty. And I was like, that's a rate question at which your ERV is operating, because you can move darn near the same amount of air with a decent quality ERV that you will with a high quality bath fan.
Most of them have some kind of boost mode.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And two, I lived in a very leaky house that had a brand new bath fan that I put in myself. And my daughter can still make the walls in the bathroom sweat in any environment because she takes really hot, really long showers. Yeah. So like there's a point where your usage of the home can outdo any of the mechanical systems that you're putting in as well. So we have to keep that in mind. It took me forever to figure out why the shower or the bathroom walls were more sweaty when my daughter uses it than anybody else. And it's because she lays on the shower floor and plays with toys. So she turns the water hotter than anybody else can stand because she's 6 feet further away from the water than I am.
It's the like, cooling effect of the water dropping through the air.
That's exactly.
Amazing.
So I don't know of an ERV system that would compensate, that self-adjusts for depressurization or pressurization. Do you?
Well, we just did the thing with Ross Trithrui in terms of systems that can be balanced or automatically balanced, right? But certainly if you're doing a simplified install into the forced air system, that's a whole different ballgame, because that system's not ducted independently. It's going right into the space conditioning system.
And it's not necessarily going to the bathroom where you need it. It could be going to the bedroom.
Yeah.
Once the fan turns on.
So are we saying that in general, if you're going to go with a more sophisticated, balanced heat recovery system, isn't it a bit of a mismatch to have that system be ducted through the much larger space heating and cooling system?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, look at it from the perspective of, okay, let's say the bathroom is an interior room. Well, that bathroom doesn't have any conditioned air going into it anyway. The ductwork doesn't, like, if it's surrounded by other rooms completely, mm-hmm. it might not have any conditioned air feeding into it because it doesn't need it.
Right.
And so therefore, that ERV might not connect to it if it just connects to the existing ductwork for the rest of the building.
But we should also point out that while you guys have said that you can boost the ERV system to accommodate moisture removal from bathrooms in the kitchen, he is installing, you know, exhaust only in bathrooms and the kitchen. So
he had makeup air in the kitchen.
Well, he does have makeup air in the kitchen for that one because it's such a large CFM. But what he's saying is, I'm going to duct the fresh air system, not to control moisture, but it's going to be ducted into the central forced air system. And then what he's asking is, while that's happening, and we're assuming that's balanced, right? Because that's a, you know, a closed system in the building. will the ERV sense when an exhaust fan goes on to compensate for that? And the answer is absolutely not. It's not. I don't even think that the systems that you can balance or that have automatic balancing would be able to react to exhaust only in the and I see what you're saying, Jake, that the kitchen is sort of balanced because they've got a makeup designated for the kitchen, but not for the baths.
Let's talk about that real quick, too. One of the things that I learned recently, like in the last couple of years, just because you have if you have an exhaust fan, like your hood, we'll call that just an exhaust fan. That's all it is. If you have an exhaust fan and you have a dampered opening, the powered side where the hood is going to move more air than the non-powered side. So having a 6-inch duct that goes outside like my hood and a 6-inch damper that opens like the makeup air in my kitchen, it's not balanced.
Yeah.
It's similar, but it can be quite far off to the point that
it's when not a I turn dedicated my pathway.
Yeah. When I turn my hood on, the damper opens and it's the same size and they're only a few feet from each other. But yet if you try to open the front door, it'll swing in and hit you, or the back door. Or if you don't have the lift and slide patio doors locked, if they're, you know, elevated, like you're going to slide them back and forth, there's a whistling noise and there's quite a bit of air that moves through there. The fact that it's powered, if you wanted it to actually be balanced, they would need to be very similar duct length, same size fan, same size power, same size duct work. Like you to get actually balanced in that system. I think what I have is close enough, but if you actually wanted them to be perfectly balanced, they would have to have the same fan, same length ductwork, same pathways.
And there's actually another exhaust fan that we haven't talked about, which will create significant pressure, which is the clothes dryer. If it's ducted to the outdoors, that's, you know, 200 CFM. And you're also not going to be able to compensate for that.
And I will say that this question of duct dryer actually comes up quite often. Like, how do you just do a traditional dryer in a house? I've yet, and maybe Steve has a different perspective on it, I have yet to have anybody complain about their clothes dryer working properly in one of our houses. Even the ones that are, you know, we have plenty that are below passive house levels of air leakage. We have plenty that have makeup air to make the hood work. That 200 CFM is depressurizing the house, but we've not had any problems with it operating or not operating correctly. And maybe I look at it different than the bath fan, but I shouldn't probably. Maybe it should have damper connected to the laundry room or something.
Well, it'd be great to do a pressure test, you know, turn on just your clothes dryer and see what impact it has on the pressure regime of the building. Because if it's tight enough, your dryer is going to be working pretty hard to overcome the resistance, but it probably creates a pressure difference. But the question is how much and for how long.
It'd be interesting to like smoke pen those those doors and everything. Have you ever, I mean, what solutions have you found for dryers, or have you ever considered?
We haven't. We had one problem where I think it was a trap in the laundry tub would dry out. The dryer would come on and there would be a sewer smell.
Yeah.
Occasionally.
Interesting.
So it would backdraft the plumbing system through the vent pipe if the laundry trap dried up.
Which, so, if it doesn't get used much, that's a pretty common problem. Doesn't get used
up, then, yeah.
So you're talking about
a relatively small pipe. No, it's a laundry tub, laundry sink.
A slop sink.
In a laundry, yeah.
Slop gotcha. Sink.
Yeah. So what's that, like an inch and a half pipe maybe?
Inch and a quarter if it's just a sink. Yeah. Inch and a half, yeah, one or the other.
So it's not a whole lot of water, and it doesn't take much to dry it, to move, to get air. Like, you still have water in the bottom of the trap and still move air across the top of it. But that was only one house, one problem.
What was the solution for that?
Put water in the trap every now and then.
Brush your teeth there once.
When you go to wash, turn the faucet on. Just, you know, once a week or something, fill the trap, make sure it's filled up.
You can do the same thing with mineral oil, right?
Well,
the water will go past the mineral oil, but the mineral oil won't dry out. and it doesn't turn rancid. That's why we use it on cutting boards.
Yeah, I've heard mineral oil. You dry, you put it in there. But we have a
floor drain sometimes.
We have a bathroom on the second floor where now that all the kids have moved out of the house, the shower doesn't get used much. So I'm in the and even the sink up there. Occasionally, like, I can go up there and be like, nah, I don't know if it's the sewer pipe or because we have a cat box up there, too. So I don't know if it's one or the other, but like I'm in the habit of whenever I go in there, I'll turn the faucet on and I'll run the shower.
If you could train the cats
for like two, if I could turn them pee in the toilet. Well, it's not pee in the toilet and flush. It's the shower in the sink. Oh,
well,
that's
well, now you added the sink. That's a different solution. I was going to recommend you just stuff the cat in the drain,
of the
plug the drain and be done with it.
Well, again, this is a safe base.
My wife is never going to. My wife does not listen to this.
So
I don't think my wife fully understands my disdain for the cats and the animals that live in our house.
Okay. So I think we've answered this question. I struggle with simplified installs of HRVs and ERVs using the duct system of the central forced air because I just think it's a bit of a mismatch.
I think the same thing for dehumidifiers, too. I know that it costs money for each set of ductwork that we're going to put into a house. I would rather everything have its own dedicated ductwork and it not rely on the furnace to be running or not running, depending on whether or not it's going to distribute air. They do separate things. Just
big
because
shoulder
they
seasons,
all,
too.
Yeah. Just because they all take ductwork doesn't mean that they should all share ductwork.
Like, I will.
And I don't want my dehum dumping on the return side of my HVAC unit because now it's dehumidifying the coil and keeping the coil from cooling down. Like there's so many different reasons to not partner them together. I understand it saves money. I don't agree with.
Well, the whole house dehumidification systems where the dehumidifier is in line with the it's designed to operate with the forced air. That's pretty different than kludging it on. One last thing on the sources of moisture and depressurization. My wife and I have a condensing efficiency Electrolux dryer.
I'm very excited.
We're pretty happy about it. Although it dumps a lot of heat into the basement.
How often do you use the condensing driver?
You should only dry your clothes in the wintertime.
I do all the laundry in our house.
You should only use your dryer in the wintertime. And then you can supplement the heats.
So then
hang dry.
I'm just verifying your statement.
I can suggest a clothesline for the summer.
Can't do that when there's a homeowners association.
You can do it inside.
You solve all my problems.
I just did a laundry room for a woman that says she has a minimum of 6 drying racks we had to supply space for. She does.
We just finished the house for some folks.
My wife will not put any of her stuff in the dryer. It all goes on a drying rack.
Yeah.
We just finished the house for some people that they didn't buy a dryer. Really? Like we put all the hookups in case they ever change their mind.
That's 48 pounds of water every load.
She hangs it outside.
Oh, outside. Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
I grew up with my mom hanging stuff. I used to have to go. She'd fill up the laundry basket. I'd have to go out and help her hang. But
yeah.
I'll tell you what, there's nothing like grabbing a towel that's been out.
That is
in
the truth.
Air for like
the
8 hours and you take a shower. Like you just bury your face in it.
Yeah, it's true. It is different than even good dryers. Totally get that. Do we have time for one more question?
Yes, we do. But I want to verify a statement. You said your wife and you are both very happy with the dryer. Does she give a crap in any way about if you do all the laundry? Does she even know that you have a condensing dryer?
It's so funny that you should say this because I have to leave written instructions if I'm gone more than 2 or 3 days because she has no idea how to. She has to be reminded about how the condensing efficiency dryer works because it's kind of
not a comment on her intelligence level.
She's a very smart
person.
Oh, yeah. She's just that that's my job. I do the laundry. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
We do have time for another question. We don't have a name attached to this one. Big fan of the podcast. What are your thoughts on using butyl sealants for areas such as under the mud sill or other areas where expansion and contraction is likely to occur? Better than regular acoustical sealant? Keep up the podcast and post to Instagram once in a while. This one actually came directly to you. That's why it says post to Instagram once in a while.
No,
by the way, so butyl sealants are like the godfather of sealants. They're the original in a caulking tube sealant, right? Like they Never get hard, kind of like acoustical sealants. If you haven't used butyl before, if you live in a place where there are gutters, chances are your gutter guy uses butyl because it flows into all those little cracks and crevices and stops the leak when they're doing, you know, corners on seamless gutters. I didn't or whatever. Know that.
That's yeah. interesting.
That's how I learned about it, is working on gutters.
So is this to butyl or not to butyl?
That's the question. So what are your thoughts? Let's talk about why expansion and contraction would affect your decision making, right?
Yeah. I'm gonna be cranky for a minute. You know, it's,
I think you meant I'm gonna continue to be cranky.
Yeah, exactly. However you think it should be. So, you know, one of the hardest parts of my job is when I do something, I give it to somebody and they say, well, what do you think if we did this? It's kind of like you want to, and someday I probably will. It's going to have to be near the end of my career, but
burn it to the ground.
I want to say, look, you schmuck, why do you think I proposed solution A? Because I like solution B? No. So don't change it and then ask me, hey, what do you think? Oh, okay. I think I'm an idiot in that my actual original solution was a really dumb idea and I'd like to go with yours.
I like when a client brings something to Steve and says, what do you think about this? And he says, if I thought that, I would have drawn that.
Yeah. Like,
ouch.
Well, it's not ouch. It's that's like, if you pay for my opinion and I give it to you, then why do you want to give me a secondary option and then want me to, you just want me to agree with yeah. you to save
yeah.
money.
Yeah.
You don't really want me to say that it's better, right? I mean, we took out a door. It was over 30 years installed with acoustical sealant on it. It was like it was installed yesterday. Mm-hmm. And that was 30 years. The stuff sucks, but it works, and it works extremely well. I would say it is the number one option for performance. Now, there's a lot of things about it. Like, you probably lose 1 in 6 tubes because the way they package it is horrible, and it squirts out the backside of the gun, and there's a bunch of problems with it.
But or I first used it in 2013, and in the last 6 months, I moved a hose at our shop that kind of just lives in our wood shop, and I got freaking acoustical sealant on me from a hose that we've been dealing with having crap all over it since 2013. Yeah, there are some downsides.
Yeah, but it's a really good. I mean, if you want to move to that and do it, and it's the same thing with the original question with the ERV. It's like, you know, a dedicated system is the best system. If you want to go and monkey around with it and add it to this and try and balance it and do all these things, go ahead. Go ahead. Good luck. It doesn't work as good as the original idea, right?
So it just occurred to me that we're talking about butyl sealants. You know, there's a whole bunch of different sealants that you can use. And I did write a blog when I was at Building Green all about types of sealants and where they should be used and how their chemical composition differs. So I've already got Pete's resource for, because, you know, it to get into discussion of when you should use butyl sealants, well, take a look at what the applications are recommended for each of the different sealants. And sometimes butyl is going to be a good fit and sometimes
not. So why, Steve, why do we use acoustical sealant in that instance?
Well, just because it stays elastic perpetually.
Right. And if it's elastic, it can't crack basically, and then start to leak.
The one that I, and it's only a sample of one. So, but the 30 years later, like no characteristics of that stuff were changed. If you stuck your finger in it, it's still nasty. It would get all over everything. It would ruin clothing in a heartbeat. But it was still elastic. It creates like a little film on it, a very slight film, but it pretty much just is.
You know, I don't know in the category of types of sealants where a Tremco's acoustical sealant falls, but it's the same with the difference between damp-proofing and waterproofing on foundations, right? But whatever the waterproofing is, it has elastomeric polymers in it that maintain the ability to contract and expand and span cracks over a longer period of time.
And this was like 3 sliding doors that we did this on. Mm-hmm. So these were things that were right there at the front of weather.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
they're seeing.
And so they're seeing freezing temperatures.
Lots of cold,
that aluminum threshold in the winter time. And it just, it didn't affect it. And so if you want to go that, okay, save the, I mean, what are you talking, right? When you're talking sealants, the crazy thing about sealants is if I migrate from this to that, the delta is probably $150 or $200.
Yeah.
It's not like if I frame this and I go to that or this foundation system versus that, that it's a 25 or 30K delta. It's a hundreds of dollars.
And it's delta. Funny, Jake, you and I were just looking at sealant joints on the hotel where we're staying.
A couple of dorks.
It comes back to every home builder just thinks of sealants as a tube of caulk. It doesn't matter. What matters is how much it costs.
It's like we were talking yesterday. It's like rigid insulation. If I put rigid insulation on there and I dictate what it is, builders only usually see rigid insulation. Mm-hmm. So I ask for EPS. There'll be XPS out there. There'll be polyiso out there. Yep. There'll be GPS sometimes. It's like, well, you just said it's a rigid insulation. No, it says type 9 EPS. See right there. That's the clarifier.
And on commercial job sites, these sealants are, it's a professional glazing skill to get the right material installed the right way. So we just have this split between the way we think about sealants in the residential and commercial building industry. It's crazy.
So in this question, we talked about why we use acoustical sealant. We talked about why the hell are you trying to redesign the wheel. But we didn't actually answer the question, thoughts on using butyl. I'm going to say no, because butyl doesn't have the body that acoustical sealant does. That's why it works in the gutter application that I brought up first. It flows, it self-levels. That's not going to be what you want out of an air sealing technology. You want it to have the body to stay where it is and then compress to the level that's appropriate.
Yeah, one of the beauties that I didn't realize, Jim at Shoreline actually figured it out. One of the beauties of using acoustical sealant too is that, you know, they can do the flange detail up at the ceiling where we're using drywall. He could have his carpenters put the acoustical sealant on Monday. And the boarders could be there Wednesday morning to push the board up. And it didn't matter.
Yeah.
Because that acoustical sealant hasn't really changed any of its characteristics. So whether the board was put up 10 seconds after or 48 hours after, it didn't really matter.
I'll tell you, we did some testing on acoustical sealant because we were trying to get away from your Trimco recommendation because of workability reasons only. And we had really good luck with USG's acoustical sealant. We left some at the shop outside for like a month and a half, and it did develop a very tiny skin, but it was still very much, you could push your finger into it and get it on yourself again. It was just a little bit less or more viscous than the Trimco stuff.
I will say, with butyl sealants, they're much more temperature sensitive, particularly cold, in terms of their, how they work. I mean, what do we have? We have latex sealants. We have acrylic. We have butyl. We have polyurethane. And we have silicone. And so they all have applications. And they're all based on their properties for contraction, expansion, dealing with different temperatures.
Adhesion.
Some deal much better with tough chemical environments. For instance, polyurethane. And that's a really good thing when you know that your sealant's going to see pH changes, you know, acid base. So it's all about matching the properties of the sealant to the job you're asking it to do.
But he's right.
That's the final word.
Yeah, there we go.
I never challenge Peter.
Well, I don't have the brain.
You challenge me all the time. You know what I mean? But in a good way.
So did we answer his question? Because I got a story to tell you.
I would love to hear your story.
You know, when I'm cranky, I try and think of happy times. Right. So it changes me around. So I'm thinking about, you know, years ago, many, many moons ago, prior to being married, I used to go out with this girl, Lorraine. And Lorraine, there were some tensions there. So I ditched her. And I started going out with this girl, Claire Lee. Claire Lee was awesome. Absolutely awesome. But the best part of that situation was whenever I got down, I used to just walk around and sing, I can see clearly now the rain is gone. And it would put me in such a happy mood.
I
kind
of saw that one coming. Holy, I can see clearly now the Lorraine is gone. Oh, man. You're a treat. You are just a treat.
So that's all I got.
You heard it here. You only hear this
But now I'm in a happy mood.
Yeah.
If that song works.
I'm glad.
And you made me happy.
There you go.
So
that's a
plus. What the hell's your problem?
These are the people that I choose to associate with. I'm choosing to be here.
We wonder about that every day.
Yeah, and this is.
But you know what my dad would say?
What?
Door's not locked. Door's not
locked. I can see your dad.
I can picture you growing up in a house where he's like,
I met his dad. I can just see his door.
Anytime you gave any kind of rebuttal, he's like, I don't lock the door. Feel free to use it.
That's good. Okay. Thank you for sending in your questions. Thank you for listening today. Questions at Unbuild It Podcast. If you would like to challenge us to answer your question, we accept easy ones too. They don't have to be challenging.
We hope you enjoy the questions as much as we do.
Yeah. It's a surprising thing. Like, I didn't think that when we started asking for questions that we would get stuff that would turn into like, we can have one question or two questions fill 30 minutes of our time, but
now
it
we
does.
Get like 50,000.
Yeah. So thank you for sending them
it's crazy.
In. We would like to ask for you to leave a 5-star review on iTunes. That helps the algorithm for the audio side. Other people find it. You can find us on YouTube. And now you can actually find us on the Build Show Network. We're actually recording from the Build Podcast Studios or the Build Production Studios this week. That's why we look in a very familiar setting if you watch the Build Show podcast. That is something that Steve and I have been with for a while. BuildShowNetwork.com. If you're not a fan already,
I'm the newbie.
Check it out. Peter is new to this environment, so we're happy that he is joining us here in Austin this week.
Well, it's happy is that's a stretch.
Okay, fair enough.
I can see clearly now the rain is gone.
Thanks for watching. Have a good day.
So long.